Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach, always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
Oh boy, I'm telling you, does Russell want to change that about himself? You know, that's the question I asked addicts, because truly, a lot of times when I'm contacted about a sexual addiction, the person isn't fully ready to commit to doing the things that they need to do. So what I have to do is to teach them what are the recovery tools, what do they need to do, and then I have to support them until they're ready to do it. Now, sometimes if they've absolutely hit a rock bottom, then they are ready to do what it is they need to do. As a matter of fact, you know, they can't do it fast enough. Those are always some pretty motivated people, and I love that because they're willing to take charge and to create the change that they want to make. Now, when I work with partners, you know, so oftentimes I get a lot of partners that they want me to fix their husband or their wife. And they don't know that there's things that they have to do too. And boy, I am so sorry about that. You know, it doesn't seem fair that by default a partner of a sex addict would have to make a lot of changes, but truly they do. Now, here's what I know about marital therapy and marriages in general. When you have somebody who has a significant problem, if you choose to stay with that person, you have to work almost as hard on yourself to be healthy enough to partner up with them and manage all the changes that they're going to need to go through. And again, I'll be the first to admit, it's not really fair. But here's my promise, that whether you be the addict or the partner, when you make the choice to 100% change yourself and better yourself by going to meetings and doing spiritual readings and inspirational readings, when you're willing to look at gratitude and what's working as opposed to what isn't, when you are willing to do the necessary readings to take care of yourself, to fellowship with people who have been through what you've been through, to go through counseling. I know, as laborious as all that sounds, I got to promise you that it will make a huge difference in your life. And you will be way better than you were before you had the addiction or were married to a person that had the addiction. That's my promise to you. So trust me here. This process is going to make you a better person no matter whether you're the addict or the partner. Again, I so understand that it can feel overwhelming, but I'm telling you, it is so worth it to go about the recovery program that you need. And believe it or not, partners have recovery programs too, because you've been so traumatized by what your husband or wife has gone through that you need to seek the help that you so readily deserve. Now tonight, I have a fascinating guest. Kate Morgan is coming on, and she talks about the fact that, you know, sex addiction invaded her life almost 20 years ago when her husband's secret life was exposed after 10 years of marriage. You know, I would have to say that's probably one of the toughest things the partners tell me. They say, you know, I thought I knew this person. I thought I knew our marriage. I feel so betrayed, not only by the person, but by myself, because I believed in something that I know that I can't believe in anymore. So Kate's going to be talking about, you know, what her disclosure, you know, the disclosure of what he was doing, what kind of chaos that turned into for her. And she's going to talk about the heartbreak and the disbelief that she experienced until she got recovery. And then the calming peace that she had never experienced in her life came to her. And she is a coach. You know, anybody who knows me knows that I'm a CSAT. I'm a certified sexual addictions therapist. And I'm a psychotherapist. I treat all kinds of problems. That's why in the intro you heard me say that I run an anxiety group. Well, I do run anxiety groups and women's groups and sexual addiction groups and anger management groups and self-esteem groups. I love group work. Well, Kate is a coach, and I'm a coach, and she wrote this incredible book called Coming Through with Grace. It was published almost 11 years ago. And it helped her to create her coaching business. So she encourages men and women around the world as they navigate this very difficult time. And, you know, what I know to be true is when you can work with somebody who's had the experience, wow, it makes all the difference in the world. So I can't wait to talk with her. She's going to talk about why she wrote the book and how she and her husband are doing, things that she literally had to do to heal. And does this ever end? And that can be the question. You know, when you've worked really, really hard, it makes sense that the next thing you ask yourself is this ever going to end? Because initially it doesn't seem like it will. But I've had the beauty of watching people 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years into recovery. And, you know, I see them from time to time as a check-in after they no longer really need my services, but I've become kind of an old friend. And they check in with me when they're feeling a little insecure about something or they want to run something by me. And, you know, it's the beauty of this work that I get to see the success. It's a dark, dark place, but I'm telling you, anybody can recover when they work the program. So that's the good news. And, you know, I want you all to go to my website, Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And on that website, I think probably what I'm most proud of is that my clients have contributed to the website, and they've written things that I've published on their blogs, and they've given examples of fire drills. You know, a fire drill is something that if you know that you're going to have tendencies to slip or relapse, you need to create an action plan that will stop that before it even gets started. And so I have people that have done that. They've written about fire drills, the inner circle, the three circles, what it was like to discover that their partner had a sexual addiction. So I'm really proud of that, as well as obviously I have a link to this show, and I have blogs that I've written for the Meadows and for ITAP, the International Institute of Trauma and Addiction Professionals. And I'm writing now for a General Path Press. If you go to my Carol the Coach website, you'll see that I've got 600 blogs of articles that I've written for magazines, well, gosh, for over 10 magazines. And so, like I said, sex addiction is not the only thing I do. But clearly it is my new love and my new passion, and I feel so fortunate to get to work with you folks and to help you, as Kate would say, navigate through all the pain and the trauma. And that's what I love to do. I also answer email at carolthecoach@aol.com. And I did get an email recently who said, "Hi, Carol, I just got turned on to your podcast and I've been listening to them for the last 2 weeks. I'm a recovering sex addict, and I feel like I've learned so much from you. I've been working the steps in SLAA and recently relapsed 3 weeks ago." Now, for anybody who's listening, SLAA is Sex and Love Addiction Anonymous. So she recently relapsed 3 weeks ago after being clean for 2 years. She was struggling with the loss and some other issues in her life. She says, "I was also doing other things in the background like watching porn. A friend at Sex Addicts Anonymous suggested I come there. I did. I related to it a lot. I was using men as objects because I was petrified to be in a committed relationship." Boy, she already knows a lot about herself. So she's giving me all that information. And she says, "There was a lot of denial. Both my parents are sex addicts. I grew up with sex, violence, rage, and a lot of porn. I always thought since no one physically touched me, it didn't affect me. But after listening to your podcast about trauma, I realized that's not true. I feel like since I suffered trauma, that stuff is deeply ingrained in me, and something can set me off really fast. I feel anger drives my disease even when I think it doesn't. I'm trying to learn what my triggers are, and I have to do the circle exercise. My question to you is, I think for some strange reason, when someone tells me I look beautiful, I go into a trance, then I want to start acting out. I'm straight, but this can happen when women say this to me too." She says, "You know, I have insurance, but a lot of the sex doctors in New York don't take insurance, so I'm struggling to try to get back on the wagon. Any advice would be greatly appreciated." Well, so oftentimes when you suffer from sex and love addiction, you're really addicted to the affection. You're addicted to the attention that it brings you. That is what validates you. It's a trauma you experienced when you didn't get your needs met as a young child. And so I would tell you, we'll call you Annie. I'd tell you, Annie, that what you've got to do is work with a good certified sexual addictions therapist who does take insurance if you can't afford to pay out of pocket. And when you do that, you're going to be doing trauma work and you're going to be doing work around neglect. And neglect is considered a little T trauma. It is just as traumatic as having been sexually abused or molested or physically abused. It really is something that you need to work on so that you don't look for people to externally validate you. That is so important because oftentimes people do. And as long as you look for people who are going to physically validate you, externally validate you, I got to tell you, what will end up happening is that you'll never feel that incredible sense of self-esteem that you can accomplish on your own. And so that's why I say you've got to do the serious little trauma work and work on your self-esteem and validate yourself. Learn how to do that for yourself so that you aren't dependent on others. And then you'll find that you're not as addicted to sex and to loving relationships, affection, and attention. So feel free to contact me at carolthecoach@aol.com if you have a question. I'm more than happy to read it on the air and answer the questions, because I know this is the only place on iTunes that you can go subscribe to the show for free and get information every week from the experts and from authors and from workshop professionals who train people all over the country, all over the world, to do this work. So tonight, as I indicated, I am going to be talking with Kate Morgan. Kate, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Now, you wrote a book called Coming Through with Grace, and it was published in 2003, and it's really somewhat of a memoir about what you went through in your own life. Is that not correct?
Yes, it is correct.
Okay, and you're actually a coach, and you coach people through, just the chaos of sexual addiction. So tell me a little bit about why you decided to write your book.
Well, this was back in 1996 when my story kind of unfolded. I was living an idyllic life with a great husband, three small children under the age of five. And I had already been married about 10 years. I knew something was wrong, but I could not have pinpointed what was wrong at all. And in a series of very short conversation with my husband one night, I discovered that he had been having an affair. Right away, I believed it was about me, so I took the blame and thought, I've been a horrible wife. I need to pull my life back together. And a few days later, the real story came tumbling out, that he was having affairs for the entire length of our 10-year marriage. And, of course, later he was diagnosed as a sex addict. So in 1996, this was not heard of, not to my knowledge. And I felt like I tried to reach out to find resources, any information I can find on the subject, because I found myself in such a bizarre story all of a sudden in a very unfamiliar world. And I found that there were only a few books. So I decided, not right away, but a few years later, to write my own. But it just began as a series of, I just had to write constantly about every emotion that was tumbling out of me in that first 6 months. It was over the top. It was more than I could handle. It was extremely overwhelming. But eventually, those notes became a book.
Well, it's kind of like you identified the need. You knew what you needed and you weren't getting, and you decided to go ahead and provide that service to other people so that they wouldn't feel as alone as you did, huh?
Definitely. And I had a real interesting spiritual awakening as a result of this entire weird, bizarre scenario that I found myself in. And right away, in the moment of profound grief, I was also feeling incredibly hopeful for the first time in a long time, and I did not understand where that was coming from. And I heard, you're going to heal this fast and then share what you learn with others. And I had no idea what that meant. But 2 years later, when I started writing my book, I was like, this is what that meant. And within 2 years, I was already on a really strong healing journey. I was in 12-step recovery. I was doing everything possible to understand how I found myself in that kind of a marriage. And I've done a lot of tough work, and I just invite everybody else to do the tough work, because that's what it's going to take. But there's a light at the end of the
tunnel. Well, you know, I know it is so much work, and yet here it is. You've written Coming Through with Grace, and then
Yes. You
subtitle it with An Unusual Love Story. So can you share a little bit about why you subtitled it that way?
Sure. The entire length of my marriage, I wasn't sure I even liked being married. I knew that I was married to a good guy. He was a professional. He was handsome. He was kind. He was great with the kids. He was wonderful with me. But something inside of me just wasn't settled at all. I knew something was horribly wrong. But in this crazy warped story, I believe I discovered what love was all about. And it was about loving him enough to let him go because he never could get help. He never did sustain recovery that he tried to do. So I was able to just say, I love you, but you have to go. And then loving myself enough to know that I was worthy of a different life with three small children and a single mom and something very unfamiliar to me. And then loving God enough to say, all right, there's a new plan that's already in front of me. Let's go for it. So I, in this crazy story, I learned what love really is, which doesn't make sense, and yet it makes perfect sense.
Wow. Okay, so you were able to figure that out, and my goodness, that is a love story because you loved him enough to let him go and to respect the fact that he wasn't going to take care of himself in the same way that you were willing to do it. And, you know, at the beginning of my show, I talked about the fact that partners so oftentimes are resentful that they would even begin to have to do the work because they think, why should I have to do the work? It's my husband that's the mess, not me. So did you share any of those feelings when you first found out about his addiction?
Oh, definitely. In fact, I read a book about codependency probably in that first month, and I handed the book to him and said, this book's all about you, which, of course, I later learned was really all about me. But I was not happy about the fact that he had the problem and I was had responsibility in it. But now I see it, or quickly thereafter, I saw it as a co-created dance. We had this dance that we did together, and it was based on addiction, co-addiction, addiction, co-addiction. And they're in tandem, and they go together, and there's not one without the other. I did not know that at the time. I had no idea. I did not understand any of that terminology. But when I read more about it, I read a lot of Patrick Carnes and Douglas Wise and Melody Beatty. And Pia Melody, yes. Those are my my go-to healers. I took this and went running with it because I found myself in such an odd story and I needed to know how I got there. And I wanted to heal it. And I did. And you can too. Anybody can. This is healable.
Well, you know, you mentioned that terminology like co-sex addict. And share with our listening audience, we may not have, there are some people that are just figuring this out and they're at the beginning stages of doing the exploration to determine, do they have a problem? Does their husband have a problem? So explain some of the terminology there.
Well, I was am a very independent woman, always was, self-sufficient. I was a nurse that took care of the kids. I did not feel dependent on my husband until things were rocky. And when things were rocky, I turned to him, and he always said, we're great, things are fine, when my insides were screaming at me that something was wrong. So I didn't listen to my intuition. I did not listen to my insides. I instead thought, well, he thinks we're okay, so we must be okay. So that is a part of codependency right there, is that I was not listening to my own reality, I was listening to his. And he was getting away with whatever he wanted to because he was able to convince me we were fine, when in fact we were not.
Well, that makes sense. And then what's your terminology for a partner? Do you refer to yourself as a co-sex addict or a co-addict or... what do you call yourself?
Well, I'm not sure I actively do that today, but certainly in the first few months and years as we were going through this healing process very, very deeply back then, sure, I could identify as a co-sex addict because my dance was definitely right after his. He would take a move, I'd take a move. He would, you know, I looked to him for reality checkup instead of believing that what I knew was correct was valid. I didn't believe in myself enough to know that my intuition was strong, that I knew what I was talking about. I knew what I felt. I knew what I saw because I allowed everybody else to talk me out of that, out of my own reality. And that's the huge indicator of codependency and co-sex addiction.
Well, absolutely. If you don't mind, share a little bit about your story. How did you discover that he was a sex addict?
Like I mentioned earlier, we were married 10 years. He came home one day. He was always punctual. There was never anything in my home that indicated that there was an issue going on. There was no pornography. He did not flirt. He did not talk about women. He didn't have any of the indicators that I would think would indicate sex addiction.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a little timid. He was a little dependent on me. He needed my affections, my touch, my just being by me all the time. So I kind of felt like I had not just three children, but four.
Mm-hmm.
So one day when he came home, I knew that something was up, and he was pacing around the house, and he would not take his coat off, and I asked him what was wrong, and he didn't answer, and out of my mouth tumbled, "Have you had an affair?" Now, where that came from, I don't know, because we hadn't talked about it before, and I never felt like anything was wrong before, never felt like he would have an affair. I thought he was incredibly loyal, so for me to even think that was a little unfathomable. But again, denial starts to leak, and apparently my denial was leaking, and my intuition was speaking when it said, "Have you had an affair?" He did not answer me, but he didn't defend himself either, and my insides knew I was right. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, I began to listen to myself. And over the next few days, I thought I was the problem. I'm just a bitchy wife. I just am too controlling. I just am not happy and satisfied with this great guy. So that was about 3 to 4 days worth, and then a letter arrived in the mail, and it was from, to this day, I don't know who it was from, but it was from one of his coworkers, and it said, "This is what your husband's been doing." Apparently a letter that my husband wrote to another woman in a different state ended up on his coworker's email. So talk about serendipities or a God moment. That was huge.
Mm-hmm.
So I confronted my husband, and, of course, the whole real story came tumbling out. And immediately, like within days, we were both in 12-step because we were both horrified. How the heck could this happen? We were in our early 30s, and, again, we had a 1, 3, and a 5-year-old. So we both got into 12-step, and I began to get it. I was hit with such a hard Mack truck that I got it because I had no other choice but to get it. He wavered for a long time. He did sustain recovery for about 14 months. And in that time, we were committed to trying to salvage the marriage. And I was soaring, and he was kind of soaring, and then realized in the end he couldn't do it. So that, in a nutshell, is our first 14 months.
Well, I'm curious because, obviously, you know, you had some sort of nudging feeling and for you to ask him that. And then when he didn't initially deny it, that was definitely some validation that you might be right.
Mm-hmm.
And then to get that letter on top of it. What was your reaction? I mean, did you rage? Did you scream? Did you punch? Did you push? Did you isolate? Did you walk away? What did you do?
When I understood that it was just one affair, I was like, "Oh my gosh, how can this happen?" But immediately I took the blame. "I'm so sorry. What have I done? What can I do better?" Which is kind of weird for me now to remember that, because at the end there, I wasn't really in love with him anymore. I loved him, but things had deteriorated so much emotionally between us that we were more like roommates. So here was my perfect out to leave the marriage, and yet I panicked because my belief was, if you don't adore me, then who will? Because I certainly didn't adore me. I didn't have those feelings for myself with any kind of self-esteem or self-respect or you know, instead of saying, hey, bucko, you know, you've got the issue, you go deal with it, I thought I had the problem and I was going to fix it for both of us.
Well, I know when you described yourself, well, you described him as being, you know, handsome and intelligent and professional. And how would you have described yourself before all this came down?
Oh, kind of the same way. I was, you know, independent, self-sufficient. I was a pediatric nurse. I was very capable and confident. But as far as my interior self-esteem, I needed him to tell me he loved me, to tell me that I was good enough, to show me that I was a proper wife. But I also knew I was not being a proper wife just because I was restless and upset and irritated a lot. Because there is the co-created relationship right there. Mm-hmm. I knew something was wrong, but I couldn't articulate it. He denied it, and therefore my insides were going crazy. So it's a really weird, insidious dance that a couple will do, and it's so subtle sometimes. I didn't know we were doing this until I looked back. I thought we had it all together, and yet, just something was a little off.
Did you ever find out who wrote the letter?
No, I never did. Okay. Yeah. But
that's one of those things you wonder if that's not the person that was having the affair busting him so that he would leave you so that she would end up with him. You know, you just always wonder, was it a do-gooder or was it somebody who was trying to break up the marriage?
You know, that's funny because I've never considered that. I assumed the entire time that it was somebody at his job, and I think it was because there was some telltale information. But but because I don't know exactly who it is, I just consider that person my angel because thank God my marriage crumbled. Thank God the whole story came out. Thank God I was young and could repair the marriage or repair myself and move on. Because if it had happened now, I mean, it would have been, you know, I would have been in the marriage still. So I'm grateful all the way around. And it's okay that I don't know who it is.
Absolutely. And then, you know, you mentioned that you went to a 12-step group. So I'm assuming you went to COSA or some group like that that actually had some expertise with sex addicts.
Actually, what happened, I was in a small town, so I went to an Al-Anon meeting and completely crumbled and told them my story, and of course, they probably had no clue what I was talking about. But from there, I was able to get some initial healing, and then with all the reading that I was doing, and I did start a COSA group in my small town for a little while. It didn't take off because my town was so small, and people were not they were pretty reluctant to join, but I got the healing in several different ways because I reached out. I really made it my mission to heal.
Well, I admire you for starting that group. You know, they say for any 12-step group, all you really need is two people to start the group, build it, and it will come. And so obviously for you, you have to admit that clearly for whatever reason, the attendance wasn't there or it didn't work out, but didn't you feel accomplished that you had tried to get that thing started?
Oh, definitely. And the sad fact was that in my circle of friends, I had picked out sex addiction in two of my friends' husbands. So it was rampant in my own little circle of friends, which shocked the heck out of me. I didn't expect that one. But I watched it unfold in several families.
Well, and that's what I say. For anybody who's experiencing this now, whether you're an addict or whether you're a partner, although sex addiction has been around forever, with pornography and technology and smartphones and that accessibility, anonymity, and affordability, it's absolutely epidemic. And so, you know, you're really a pioneer in the field, and your book is a pioneer, pioneer's dream, in that you were able to have the courage to write about yourself. So many people would feel shame or humiliation.
Well, 2 years into it, I was already pretty proud of what I had done, and I was I knew I had come a long way. And I also knew I had some really good information to share. The book makes people uncomfortable because it's really a raw version of my story. It kind of takes you through moment by moment of what I was feeling, and it's extremely raw. And people have a hard time because they can either resonate with it, which is hard, or they don't understand it, and that's okay. I've had all sorts of people, you know, tell me that they could or could not read the book, but on some levels, people have gotten something out of it. This is an insidious disease, and it's become more rampant in the 18 years since I went through it. And it's profound. I'm sad for the number of families and marriages that are getting harmed because it's. I never could have imagined that I would be in this story. Never in a million years.
Yeah, and yet you didn't have any history in your family of origin or the generations before you that there was some infidelity or sexual addiction?
No, but I believe what goes hand in hand with this very strongly is sex abuse, and there is sex abuse all over my family, and I think in his a little bit. I'm not real sure on that. So... I believe, personally, for me, that's how my filters got destroyed, was by enduring sex abuse as a kid, and then my filters for healthy sexuality were skewed. So I was unconsciously able to hook into a sex addict. He didn't know it, I didn't know it, but we were young, and this is how subconsciously we do partner up with people who we need a healing from. And ultimately, I believe that's what happened. As a result of marrying a sex addict, that whole profound, ugly story was able to heal so much in me, including the sex abuse. Because you got to look at all the issues.
Well, absolutely, and I agree it goes hand in hand, because what we see is there are really two types of sex addicts, the kind that kind of create a habit disorder, behaviors get compulsive because there's this habit disorder, this compulsion, this anxiety inside of the person. The second way is obviously that they've been abused either physically, emotionally, or sexually, and what we know to be true is that partners partner up with each other if there's a history of abuse. So let me ask you, do you have a platform other than this book to share your story? Do you speak out loud? Have you been on radio shows or television to kind of share your wisdom?
I do radio shows. I've also done a number of book signings, and I am on the West Coast, so I do that here. And I have a website where I do all my coaching from. And, those are about the...
Go ahead and tell us your website.
It's katemorgancoaching.com.
Okay. And then, you call yourself a coach, and certainly there are all types of coaches, all types of training. Was yours from the School of Hard Knocks, or did you actually go to and get certified, go to a coaching school?
Mine is a little bit of both. School of Hard Knocks, for sure, is where I learned all the hard lessons and the valuable lessons. And then I'm also a nurse, so I understand addiction from a medical point of view, scientific point of view. And then I was trained as a coach. So a little bit of everything, and combined, it's really quite rewarding to help people in the throes of this, whether in addiction or in co-addiction. I mostly service the co-addicts, but I certainly speak to sex addicts as well, and I do speak with people all over the world, and the amazing piece is that all the stories are the same. The details are different, but the major story is the same. And it's amazing to me.
Well, tell me a little bit about how the kids are doing, because obviously they're experiencing with some of the consequences of the sex addiction with you and Dad not being together?
Yeah, they were little. They were 1, 3, and 5 when the story came out, and 3, 5, and 7 when he left our home. He was an incredible father while he lived with them, but I believe what happened is he began to distrust himself as an upstanding citizen, perhaps, or a person with integrity, and he started bowing out of their lives a little bit. He kept in touch with them and certainly saw them weekly, but not to the extent that he had been when he was with us. And then after about 5 years, I moved 1,500 miles away, and he does come and visit them. They are now all in college. My youngest is 19. And they have done quite well. I still believe they're going to have a story to heal with their father. But that's none of my business. That's theirs. That's their relationship. They love each other. They care for each other. They talk to each other. They have good relationships. But I'm sure they may have questions down the line, and that's for them to kind of figure out. And if they need to ask anything of me, they know I'm here. I have never badmouthed their dad or anything. He is their father, and that's a very important relationship that they have.
Well, I can really hear that, the boundary work that you've done. I mean, clearly, mm-hmm. you were so enmeshed with your husband at the time of discovering the sexual addiction, and to be able to have that faith that the kids will be able to figure things out and the relationship is what it is, and it has the potentiality of getting better. That speaks very highly to the work that you've done.
Like I said, it's a lot of work, but it's so worth it. Every step of this has been so rewarding, even if it's been excruciating as well. I would not want to repeat this experience, but I am profoundly grateful that it happened.
Well, would you say that as a result of everything you've gone through that you are better for it and a wiser person?
Absolutely. I knew that I was strong and courageous. I just didn't know how much I was a strong and courageous person. I have been single parenting my children since then. I have not partnered up with anybody. I've certainly dated. But I'm very proud of who I've become as a result of this story. I've lost a lot of relationships because I now speak the truth and I say it like it is, and I've lost people as a result of it. But that's okay, because honesty is very important to me. Healing is extremely important to me, and integrity, and that's what I stand by.
Well, and I'm a believer that in healthy relationships, conflict breeds intimacy. So obviously, if those people could not weather the storm of your assertiveness and your honesty, that wasn't a healthy relationship to begin with.
Exactly. Yes, I agree. Yeah.
So now, after several years in recovery, and that's how many years now?
Well, it's 96. What is that, 18?
Uh-huh. 18. So almost 2 decades worth of recovery. Wouldn't mm-hmm. you say that your life is easier now?
You know, I'm not sure it's easier, but it certainly is different. And sometimes that's easier and sometimes that's harder. I assume that when I was well, you know, after 5 years and I was living this great life and being a single parent and feeling very accomplished and very recovered, another episode hit my life and I caved a little bit, and it took me some time to get out of that. So there are, you know, recoveries like life. You go up and you go down, and there are pitfalls and there's some great mountains to climb, and it's different. I think the difference is I now have tools that I can grab hold of much faster, that I can pick myself up or do something different, make a new choice. I have plenty of tools and plenty of experience to now help me along those rocky paths. So that's what's different, and that's what's valuable. Because life doesn't stop being life, and life can be hard sometimes.
Oh, 100%. And, mm-hmm. you know, I really admire the fact that you're right. It's not necessarily what life deals us, but it's how we work with it. And you've got the recovery tools. And so I just kind of want to go over those recovery tools real quick. It's something that I talk about a lot on the show. So I just, you know, obviously you did do a group, a 12-step group for a little bit,
yes.
started one. And
mm-hmm.
did you seek a certified sexual addictions therapist?
No, I don't believe I had one. I had somebody who understood abuse, but I don't believe she was, a certified sexual addiction therapist.
Okay, and you know, that is so important that you did have somebody who worked specifically with the trauma of abuse.
Yes.
And that is a wonderful thing. For anybody who's listening to the show, you find people that are certified in sexual addiction by going to sexhelp.com, which is actually Dr. Carnes' site, and mm-hmm. you just put in your zip code, and it shows you whoever is closest to you. I think it can really help cut to the chase. There are 1,600 of us across the globe, but like you said, you know, 16, 18 years ago, people weren't even talking about this, let alone specializing in it.
Oh, nobody was. Yeah, I found like 3 books, and they were immensely helpful, and one of them was Patrick Carnes.
Right, and that's the other recovery tool, is that
mm-hmm.
you definitely did do recovery reading. Now, let me ask you, because we say that there's this Bible for partners who are experiencing a loved one with sexual addiction, and it's called Mending the Shattered Heart, and it's by Stephanie Carnes. Did you ever see that book?
No, but I'm going to go find it now.
Yes.
No, and in fact, most of the reading that I did was from the sex addict's point of view, and that's why I thought, somebody needs it from the co-sex addict's point of view. I did read a book by... Yeah, Back from Betrayal by Jennifer Schneider. That was out. And
yeah,
that was about it.
She's absolutely wonderful, too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then I want to ask you, what healthy behaviors did you participate in? Because obviously in getting to know yourself better and identifying your needs, there had to be things that you made a commitment to actually do.
Well, the biggest thing that I actually did, and I'm a great proponent of now and encourage everybody else to do, is listen to your intuition. Because after my marriage fell apart, I wrote down all the times that I remembered my intuition speaking,
mm-hmm.
and every single time was correct. Everything that my intuition said actually happened. So
wow.
That validated and confirmed that mine was pretty darn keen, so I can trust it. So I am a big believer in listening to that little small voice that's trying to get noticed. I still struggle with it, but it's certainly, I go to it much faster than I ever did 20 years ago. I also practiced healthy behaviors.
Yes, what healthy behaviors did you practice?
Well, healthy boundaries. I was... when my ex-husband was not willing to get help, I did an intervention. And when he wasn't willing to go to rehab, I asked him to leave, and he left that very day.
Wow.
I practiced healthy boundaries between him and my children, who were very small. I practiced healthy boundaries between me and him and what I wasn't willing to accommodate and what I was. I stayed out of his business and out of his recovery, or lack of recovery. I was very much on my own path, willing to heal, and I did everything I could to make that happen.
Fantastic. And how about the development of fun in your own life? What did you end up doing for fun as you were coping with all the stress and all the recovery?
Funny you mention that, because I think as co-addicts, we forget to have fun, which is just so darn sad, and I certainly was one of them. I was very serious, and I was irritated a lot, so I wasn't a very fun person to be around. But right after my story happened, about 6 weeks later, a friend of mine asked if we could take our small children to Disneyland, and it was in Disneyland where I actually heard myself laugh for the first time in 6 weeks. And I thought, okay, I'm going to be all right. I can laugh again. And it took a long time before I stopped hurting. In fact, my daily mantra was, you know, breathe. I would just get out of bed and say, just breathe, because I felt like I had been kicked in the gut for so long. But I was able to add a lot of fun to my life. I started taking advantage of situations or fun more than I had before, because I was so serious and so money conscious that we couldn't, you know, we did a lot of fun, but I also put the kibosh on a lot of fun. So I started taking myself out for a weekly dinner date. My children were being cared for by a babysitter, and it was a non-negotiable date for me alone. And that's when I started writing my book and started taking myself out to places by myself. I started traveling more. And to this day, fun is a huge, huge thing in my life. I make sure that I'm well taken care of and that self-care is put into place, because if you don't have self-care, you can't care for others.
Oh, absolutely. And right now I'm talking with Katie Morgan, and Katie wrote the book Coming Through with Grace, and it was subtitled An Unusual Love Story, written in 2003, at least published in 2003, and you can find out more about that book by going to www.katemorgancoaching.com. And if my listeners would like to work specifically with you, do you do that via Skype, phone, or in person?
I do that via phone, and if it happens to be in the state of Washington or nearby, I can certainly do it in person, but it's mostly done on the phone, and very easy. My number's written all over my website, my email's on the website, very, very easy to get in touch with me. And it's easy to set up the session.
Or, I just want to remind our listeners that they can contact you at katemorgangrace@gmail.com. That is her email if you want more information about her after you look at her website, www.katemorgancoaching.com. And that is morgancoaching.com. And so now, do you take credit cards, checks, cash? How do you do that, Katie?
I do. It's very easy. On my website, everything's done through PayPal. So just, you know, there's a complimentary call where anybody can call me, and it's about a 20 to 30 minute call to find out if coaching is a good fit for both of us, and if I am a good fit for each client, and that's free. And then based on that, you'll be directed back to the website to choose a session. And it's all very easy. It's all PayPal, credit card. If that's not a possibility for a client, they can certainly pay me in check. And that's just, we do that through email or through a contact on the phone. That's very easily done.
Totally makes sense. Okay, so I would encourage listeners to go to her website. Again, that's katemorgancoaching.com. And, you know, they can get your book through Amazon. Can they get it through the website?
They can get it through the website. I've got a home inventory, so you'll get it probably faster by going through my website, because I can mail it out tomorrow morning or whenever. Otherwise, there's also a Kindle version. And also, yeah, you can get through Amazon. Several ways,
okay.
And those are all listed.
Well, you've certainly offered my listeners a lot of hope, and that's, you know, her main message is that she wants you to know that you can heal from this, but it doesn't happen overnight. But one day you'll be crying, and the next minute you'll find yourself laughing, and that you'll see that your grief has gotten better and better and better over time. So I think that is a wonderful, hopeful message for people that are in such deep pain. They wonder if they'll ever be rid of the excruciating feelings that they're having right now.
I thought for sure that I would be going to my deathbed with that excruciating grief. And the day that I realized that, I actually woke up one morning and realized it's over. Yay, it's over. I'm not in that excruciating grief anymore. And that was about 20 months after it all started. And that varies, so don't get worried. It varies from person to person. But I was shocked. And now I talk about the story through laughter, through, you know, it's a very matter-of-fact story. It doesn't affect me anymore. I thank God for the story. I feel grateful. My life has changed in so many ways. And it's just a story that happened to me a long time ago. Not a big deal.
Well, you can hear that, you know, you've definitely created a life of your own. I'm sure there are plenty of women listening going, I want what she has. So I so appreciate you sharing this valuable information. And
sure.
Before we end the call, I just want to ask you, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, just that you can get through this. You really, really can. I know there are so many people who ask me, can I get through this? And my answer is absolutely yes. And it'll be a rewarding ride, even if it's hard. It'll be very rewarding. So take advantage of that.
Well, and I think it's so inspirational that you share with people that they really should trust their gut. You know, I'm a big proponent of saying that women especially operate from what they think, how they feel, and what they know, and that's using their head, their heart, and their gut. And oftentimes, their head, what they actually think, and their gut coincide. It may be the heart, their emotions that take them away from what's really going on. But truly, when in doubt, go with your gut. You just can't go wrong with that. So it's nice to hear that, you know, you were so good at listening to that once you got the hang of it and could see that everything you were doing was right.
Correct.
You write this blog, Moving On, to encourage people how to move on. And you're available to speak if people would like to contact you. So I just thank you so much. And the next time you write a book, let us know, and we'd love to talk with you again.
Great. Thank you so much, Carol. I appreciate your time. This was fun.
All right. You take care.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. So that was Kate Morgan, and obviously she had a lot to offer all of you. And if you're an addict, I think she gave you a good sense of, you know, what a partner can experience. Although I have to tell you, I think she's coping with it a little bit better than the average. So if you're a partner and you're hearing it and you may be thinking, I'll never be like that, well, you will with time. But obviously, she's an excellent role model. And I really did just take a look at her website, and it's amazing. You know, she answers common questions like, how'd you get there? Will the gut-wrenching agony of betrayal ever go away? Can you be happy again? Should you stay or leave the addict? Most of the partners I work with, they want to stay. So then the question becomes, what do I do? What do I need to do to be able to stay and not be as devastated? And if one decides to go, then of course that next question is, will I ever find a healthy relationship? And of course you will, but that means you have to work on you. So I will not be around next week. I'm taking a little break, but I'm going to have an excellent repeat of a previous show. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to all 80 or 90 shows, I'd encourage you to download that show and take a listen. And as I say at the end of every show, you know, there will only be one of you at all time. So I really want you fearlessly to have the courage to be yourself. And we'll talk soon. I'll see you in 2 weeks. And feel free again to email me at carolthecoach@aol.com or go to my website, Sex Help with Carol the Coach. You have a great week.